This is the Modern Canadian Shooter Podcast, highlighting and talking to the people who are a part of modern gun culture in Canada, with your hosts, Taylor and Patrick.
Some good, some bad.
Dude, yeah, no, we just got another, we're actually getting another dumping right now as we speak. So, yeah, after I'm done this, it's one of those snow, like it stops for an hour or two. And mm-hmm. then it's like, oh yeah, I'll go shovel the walk. And then you just see that cloud coming from the south and you're just like, everything was for fucking naught. Like this was all just useless. Like that's, I grew up in Vancouver. So you got your one dump of snow, then you shovel. That was it. We're here in Kamloops, and like you would know it living out in Alberta. It's just like, fuck, man, what's the point? What's even the
dusting.
Point?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, like I live in a complex and everyone scratches each other's back. Like there's been times where like I've gone out to like, oh yeah, let's go. Time to go clear the walks. But then like the neighbor two doors down is like, hey, buddy, got it for you. It's just like, oh man, all right. I got the next one. But
yeah. Well, there was enough snow to pull out the snowblower. So I did my neighbor's walks too. Usually I try not to use it because it's a pain in the ass to get going and the other stuff, but there was enough.
My parents just like they moved up from Vancouver too recently up here. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, we never thought we'd need a snowblower, but now we're like, we're looking into one. We're seeing like, it's just like, yeah, like it's so funny. Once you get out of Vancouver, you realize like all the Canadian memes about owning a snowblower and all this stuff. It's true. It's real. I've learned that in the decade that I've lived here. But how was the range day?
Good. I took a bunch of different guns out. Took out the, this is new to me, but it's a buddy of mine. It's a Savage 334. Mm. It's their new, it's a Turkish gun. This one's from Turkey. It's made by ATA. It's fucking good. It's so good. The bolt's nice and smooth on it. It's just a 60 degree lift, so you can see you got lots of room around your scope there. And accuracy was pretty fucking good too. So,
dude,
can you swear on your show?
Oh, fuck yeah, we do.
All right, good.
Yeah. The only person that's come on the show that doesn't swear is the other HGG, Hoser Gun Guy. But that's because he doesn't swear. But dude, the Turkish guns, like, wow. Like we're starting to see some, like, I'm super new to the gun community for the most part, but like the leaps and bounds Turkish guns have made over the past couple of years.
Like, yeah, some are good. Some are still trash, but some are good.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and sometimes the trash turns out to work really good. Like I had a GSG out today as well, and a GSG 16, and it was flawless. Absolutely flawless. Just
firing away.
Like homie of mine, he has a GSG 16 too, and like they're perfect range guns. Just like it's a good little party piece, right?
Yeah,
like, gets HK slap it, shoots 22. Everyone gets to have fun. And there was one specific brand of ammo. I forgot what it was, but the gun hated that. But then everything else, like we would mag dump the full, what is it, like 25 or 30 rounds that you're able to get in
25 round clip. Well, you can get mag too.
The drummy boy, yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Fun party piece. But
well, my kid's going to use it for three gun for action shooting because it's got high capacity. It's tiny. It's lightweight. You can you can pop the stock like right in if you need to. So that's what he's going to use it for. He had been using a 10-22, 10 round mags. Nah, 20, 22, 25 in this thing. I printed the MP5 SD 4N for it.
Based. Dude, and that's the other, like, I've seen on Reddit and a few other places, dudes make their GSG 16, give it that 1990 SWAT era MP5 with, like, the Surefire flashlight handguard or, like, MP5 SD. It's just like,
Yeah, pretty good.
It sucks being broke, like, because that looks like such a fun project to do. Like,
well, this one was $389. Like Cabela's had it for $389 for Boxing Day. So I'm like, I don't need it, but I want it. And for that price,
if your kid's gonna use it too, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I've noticed too, at a course I was on back in November there, dude was rocking his GSG 16, the one that's the Scar L clone. Mm-hmm. And that thing was running flawlessly. Like it didn't get super cold that night. Probably like, you know, just, you know, between +1 and -3 throughout the evening. Mm-hmm. But that thing was fucking running. And like he had it pimped out, you know, he had the Surefire flashlight. I think he had like an EO. Actually, let me take a look at the photo. It's my desktop background here. Let's take a look. Yeah, he's got the EOTech on it, the Surefire M300. It just absolutely and yeah, I think he had a Somo Gear PEC 15 on it. But he was running that thing. Like, everything on the gun was worth more than the actual gun.
Than the gun, yeah. Sounds like it.
But, yeah, and, like, I think for, like, yeah, like, for, you know, action sport shooting and stuff like that, especially for kids, that's another, like, another good platform. Like, those GSGs, man, they're...
Yeah,
they're doing the right things.
Yeah, the TM22 is good too. Yeah. I've seen a bunch of those out. They seem a bit more reliable than the GSG16s, and they've got big old stick mags you can get for them too, or 10 rounders.
Yeah. I need to get a 22 already. Like that's maybe later this year I'll finally get a 22. But
I got a couple.
I need to get one. I you're not a gun owner until you own at least one 22, and I still fucking don't own one. Son of a bitch.
Should have been your first one.
Well, okay, all fairness, first gun was an SKS.
My first gun was an SKS too.
See, yeah, like it either has to be a 22, it either has to be like, yeah, like a 10-22 or an SKS. And like once you get like, okay, yeah, you're good. Where my one buddy's like, yeah, my first gun was a Tika T3 Tactical that he got off a buddy. Oh, this gun, it was the best deal I've ever seen. The best deal. What a terrific deal. Wow, I said when I heard. So a coworker of his was going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. So you can already kind of see where this is going. And homie just got his pal, like that week, just got his pal. And so he's talking about it at work. And he's like, dude, I'm going through a divorce. I have a Tika T3 Tactical, Vortex Viper PST2 5-25, international barrel on it. And... 100 rounds of ammo, $2,300. It's yours. And he texts me. He's like, is this a good deal? Like, if you fucking don't, I'm driving down right now to come pick that up. He's like, it's a really good deal. I'm like, dude, the optic alone on that gun is $1,500-$1,600. And that rifle is probably $2,000 or so. He's like, yeah, I think I'm going to buy it. I'm like, do it. And, that gun, like now that I own a Tika too, like, yeah, like, but that one, like the Tika T3 Tactical. Oh my God. But that was his first gun. His first gun was essentially like four grand and 6.5 Creedmoor too. It was like a $4,000 precision rifle. He's like, all right. So like what's this thing accurate out to? I'm like, to farther than you can fucking see, dude. He's like, oh really? I'm like, come up this way. We'll go to the power lines, we'll set up some steel, and I guarantee you we'll get you reaching out to 500 within your first three shots. He's like, okay.
Just gotta do some math. Not even math for 500.
God, no. Holdovers. Yeah. Holdovers and just, yeah, knowing your optics and stuff like that. The only crappy thing out this way is that there's so much wind. Like, even on a con day, like, you're having to do a lot of wind calls. That's what I've learned so far. So, holdovers are easy, but like, when I went 2 weeks ago, the wind started front, or, you know, it was north to south. So, it's just like, all right, like, not much to really do there. But then it would shift to from east to west randomly, and then you'd get like good gusts of like 20, 25 kilometers an hour. Then it would stop. So like doing wind calls was a lot more interesting, but especially out this way. But yeah, holdovers. Just know your holdovers, especially with the reticle. Yeah. It's an MOA too. I forgot what Vortex calls their that reticle, but it's just like, yeah, put her on the 5 mark, but you're slapping steel.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Yeah.
I had a Mossberg lever out at the range today too, and it started good. It didn't end well. I kept like the tube kept jamming on it, so like the follower like jammed up somewhere in the middle. It wouldn't feed shells anymore. Had a couple of fails to eject, which with a big bet like scope on top of the ejection port, I guess so.
Yeah,
I guess that's, you know, problematic, but. Yeah, I just unjammed it a little bit earlier here.
What caliber is that?
30-30.
Beautiful. That's the other thing I'm looking for. We should start seeing them this year is Marlins, we should start seeing new Marlins showing back up into Canada this year, which I'm
they're
going to
be so they're going to be so expensive.
Oh, guaranteed. But now that it's Ruger backing them, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now that Ruger's backing them, like, yeah, I guarantee you for like a dark edition, it's going to probably be northwards of $3,000 just to get your foot in the door. But it'll be the only lever and the, like the last lever gun you'll ever need because. My God. Like, I've seen a few reviews down in the States of the new ones, mm-hmm. and guys are just like, I watched one video where the guy's like, all right, here's my Remington Marlin, and this is my brand new Ruger Marlin. And he's like, it's almost a completely, like, everything about the gun is just better. And like, he's like, the finish is better, the tolerances, everything is better. It just looks better. Like, he's just like, yeah, well worth it. But yeah, he's like, yeah, this did cost a little bit more than when it was ran by Remington, but you get what you pay for, especially with guns. Like,
sometimes you get what you pay for. Sometimes you pay like a lot for a brand. Ruger can be that way. Some of their guns are a good deal. Yeah, but the levers, like, yeah, it's a weird market. I'm hoping that Mossberg picks up production of these again, because there is no value price lever on the market right now.
No.
They used to be like, mm-hmm. I remember, you know, I got my license in the early 2000s. And back then people were selling their levers. There was all sorts of used ones because everyone was going to bolt action. Mm. We got these like polymer stock rifles now, and they're way cheaper to make. So we're just going to make those and they'll be cheap. So those were coming out and people were buying those and they're getting rid of their levers because 30-30 lever, like, it's not accurate. It's not very good for distance. Mm-hmm. Doesn't carry a lot of power, whereas you could take a 308 or a 270, 30-06 or whatever and really hit something far. But those days are gone. And now all those used levers are going for $1,000 plus, even if like old crappy old Winchester 94s, you know, in the mid 2000s, they're going for $200-$400. That's it.
Yeah. I think people are starting to realize now too, because I wanted to, like, the plan for me at some point is to get a lever, mm-hmm. is that we're, you know, I think with, especially, well, out here in BC with COVID, a lot of people are like, I need to get outside more. I need to just go out, be in nature. I'm mm-hmm. guilty of that. And then you realize like, oh, nature is beautiful, but there's a lot of stuff out there that wants to turn you into poop. You know, you got bears, you got cougars. Mm-hmm. And it's good to have something to let the cougar know, not today, sir. No, thank you. Wrong tent, wrong camp. And guys are realizing like, oh yeah, like, well, shotguns are good. Shotguns are a terrific platform for a camp gun. Mm-hmm. Like, I have one built, which is a half Turkish shotgun. It's half American, half Turkish. It's a CZ712G2. And the barrel and some of the parts are made in Turkey because it's stamped right on mm-hmm. and made in Turkey. But then the receiver, it says made in Kentucky. So it's it's a very interesting half American, half Turkish Czech gun.
Yeah, well, the CZ has done that with some of their other guns too, like the Hulu Renova. CZ brings those into the US and sells them as the CZ1012. Mm. Same gun, exact same shotgun.
The one thing I like about it too is that it takes Beretta parts. So whenever I want to get this or that, it's just like, oh, it's Beretta compliant. Terrific. Slap that on.
That's nice. Yeah.
But guys realize like, oh yeah, like for like a camp gun, like a 30-30 is a good deterrent. Like, it does, again, not a lot of power. But if
fast to reload.
Yeah.
Holds lots.
Holds lots. Exactly. And you know, if you need to get around back on target, just learning the action of your gun, practicing dry firing, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that and 45-70, like, I know a homie, he goes out into the woods, he's got beautiful 45-70. Taylor actually has one too. Oh, he did it beautifully. We should post a photo of it sometime because it's beautiful. But people started going like, oh yeah, shit, like, lever guns are good for the bush, they're good in a woods, like, not to hunt, but like, if I'm going on a hike somewhere in the back nine or mm-hmm. camping with my family. And then yeah, now lever guns are, yeah, like you said, like, even the cheap ones, like, I bet if we went onto Gunpost right now, you and I, the cheapest one we'd probably find in our area, like an old shitty one, would probably, like, I bet you a Henry would be like $500 still.
Up up.
Yeah.
You're all up. Because I've been looking for one because I need one for the PAL course, right? Mm. As an instructor, I need a lever action. I had another one that someone had loaned me, like a rimfire one. Mm-hmm. But the action on it wasn't very good. So I've been looking for a decent 30-30. I found one for 500, clapped out, doesn't work, barrel's shot out, rusty as shit, like non-working. For working, this one was $700, and that's the best deal that I've seen in the last 3 months.
Oh my God, you were so right when you said up. Oh,
$1,000.
Oh,
you might God. Find some in the $800-$900. They're not going to be in good condition. $1,000 though.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. The cheapest one, $550 for a 22.
Yeah.
Wow.
Those Holy don't count. Yeah. 22 levers are frustrating.
I have a buddy who owns one and like, yeah, it just jammed.
Yeah. The mechanisms. Now, mind you, that that Duryea one, because it's mag fed and not tube fed, it's going to be simpler on the bolt. So it might be better.
Hmm. Yeah.
There's just too much mechanism. There's too much going on with the 22s.
For such a small round. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I say that even the fucking big ones, like even this one had issues today, all sorts of issues. Let's see if this fore end is loose on it too. To tap that back into place.
Oh, another fun project. Another fun day spent in the layer there. Making it that's always such a fun time too. Once you get that idea and just I did that with a shotgun recently. Let's make this more efficient. Anyway, screw it. Let's hop right into this. Welcome to another episode of the Modern Canadian Shooter Podcast, where we talk about things that are modern Canadian and shootery. And today, well, if you haven't already guessed by his voice, it's a voice that you probably heard either on YouTube or on the Slamfire podcast. We got Adriel, the hunting gear guy, on today. Dude, thank you so much for coming on today. And for maybe the one or two dudes that don't know who you are, introduce yourself to the class.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, my name is Adriel Michaud. I'm the hunting gear guy on YouTube. I am a shoot boss for Project Maple Seed. So I put those on in Alberta. It's like a marksmanship course, kind of a thing. I'm a RPAL instructor in the Edmonton area. I don't know, I do some other stuff. Three gun shooter. I like doing three gun shooting, the kind of biggest matches in Alberta, which Alberta has the most active three gun community in the country. So
for sure.
Yeah, like shooting that and hunting, that kind of stuff. All sorts of different shooting stuff. Yeah.
The one thing I like about your channel and what you do is that you're a very well-rounded Canadian gun member. Like when you look at different content creators out there, they usually kind of like, for us, like we're guilty of this. We kind of back ourselves into a niche sometimes. Like we kind of aim at a specific part of the community, where one thing you do is that you kind of blanket cover everything, whether it's like, you know, the modern style of shooting, you know, which is kind of tapped in with, like, you know, multi-gun, three-gun, stuff like that, a little bit of IPSC, and, you know, well, Project Maple Seed, the 22 precision game is just exploding here in Canada. It's really cool to see. But then you also, you also cover hunting stuff as well. Like, you know, you cover hunting gear. I'm looking at your website. It's just like boots. Here's boots that, you know, if you're out in the cold, like, that's hunting gear. Like,
all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Camping stuff. Yeah.
Camping stuff. You kind of cover everything in the Canadian gun community. Is that on purpose, or is it just because, like, I love this shit and here's my experience?
It's the second. I don't really make like a ton of money off this. I primarily do it because if I look for reviews on a gun and I don't find good ones that I would like, I make the review. That's why I started my channel. That's why this is dating me, because like back in the mid 2000s, we had these gun magazines that would just talk up all this garbage. And there was one gun that pissed me off the most, the Remington R51. The gun mags were just stroking it over this piece of shit. And it is just, it's a bad gun. They discontinued it, stopped selling it. It was a piece of garbage. Yet all these gun mags were talking positive about it.
Oh, it's disgusting.
And it's got a weird operating mechanism and it doesn't work. And it was always garbage. Always garbage. And yet all these gun magazine writers wrote about it and talked positive about this piece of shit. And there was an opportunity to do something better than that, right? Self-publish, yeah. Put it online, and you know, talk about pros and cons of all the guns, right? Or equipment or whatever I'm reviewing at the time.
I'm just going to put this out there for the viewers if they haven't already looked up what the Remington R51 looks like. But it looks like if the Walther PPK was trying to give birth to a gun, but that gun that was, you know, that was coming out of the Walther PPK didn't get enough air while being born, and that also the Walther PPK was abusing 4-Loco and Adderall and bath salts during the pregnancy, that's what the Remington R51 looks like. It's fucking wow. Like, and like, look at the length of from the trigger to the back strap, like in the mag. Oh god.
They based it on an earlier design, like a really early design of some other pistol that was in a much smaller caliber. I think it was in 380 or maybe something smaller. And they tried bumping it up to 9mm and it didn't work. And Remington's designers or engineers were, you know, too shit-brained to make it work properly. And they put out a real piece of crap.
The people at Kel-Tec would say that this gun is ugly, and that's saying something. Like, if Kel-Tec came out with this, it makes sense, because like, I'm looking like, yeah, the it's copied off the, like, on the Wikipedia page, the R51 is copied in the Walther PPK pistol using a stationary barrel and recoil. So yeah, like, and it looks like they tried to copy a PPK, but like, yeah, the crackheads in Florida and the Kel-Tec factory, when they're not smoking beach plastic and, you know, bath salts in their crack pipes, like, would even say that this is, my god, yeah, just
Kel-Tec would never make this, because Kel-Tec would have to have like something completely weird in it. It would have to have like a 4-row magazine in it, and then 30 rounds of 22 WMR or something, yeah. Something else wild in it. They don't make practical guns for practical people. They make wild stuff.
Yeah, that's why we loved them. Like,
yeah,
Kel-Tec's just the wild card. Like, do you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yep.
Yeah, wild like. Yeah, with Charlie, like, wild card, bitches! That's Kel-Tec. That's Kel-Tec, everything they fucking do.
Keeping everyone else on their toes.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, no, understandably. And to echo what you said there, I read a few gun magazines every now and then, but you never really see articles coming out giving the full picture, like criticizing, like every time it's in a magazine. I think, you know, modern printed media is still kind of guilty of this, is just like they just completely blow smoke up everyone's butt, or like all they do is they just concentrate on the good. Near the end of the whole article, they might have like half a paragraph of like, I didn't really enjoy this part of it, but that's just my opinion, but everything else, it's completely terrific. Like, you can definitely tell there's a lot of bias in printed media versus kind of like, you know, what's going on today with, you know, YouTube, podcasts, and other ways of reviewing. I don't know if you've noticed this as well, but I'm starting to see a lot more unbiased reviews. You know, it all depend, you know, you have to look at who's putting out there, but people being honest and real with the product they're getting. But mainly the reason why too, I think, is because people are actually purchasing it with their own money, and therefore it's, you know, yeah, like, I've spent money on this, here's my actual 2 cents.
If you can, and it's the advertiser, right? So magazines get advertising from gun manufacturers. So Remington would be an advertiser for, you know, those, or Vista Group or something like that. So they're never going to shit talk those products that hard, because they might lose a big advertiser. YouTubers, nah, it's not as big of a risk. The big manufacturers generally don't sponsor reviewers, like Savage, Remington. None of those guys are going to sponsor reviewers. You might get some guys with, like, they have a gun shop that's their sponsor, or they might have an ammo sponsor or something like that, or they might have no sponsors at all, and it's just YouTube advertising, have at it. And in those cases, or especially Patreon funded, well, now there's nothing holding you back from to calling out shit when you see shit, right? So and that's, or, you know, I think some of the reviewers out there, like, calling shit out when it's shit is their shtick. Like Hoplophile, he calls out stuff when it's bad, pretty harshly, you know.
Yeah,
he calls it out. Yeah, and it's that's kind of his brand, right? Which is which is a good thing. I think that's a good that we have those kind of reviewers out there.
He did a review on the Crusader Arms Templar, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember watching that, and I'm thinking, like, this is like, and that's what got me into him. And I'm like this guy doesn't seem like your kind of traditional Canadian. Oh, he's American. Oh, and yeah, completely called it out. And then it's just like, yes. Well, I don't want to say called out, but he pointed out everything that iteration of the Templar that was wrong. And it was very refreshing to see. And then I know a few people that own a Templar, and I sent them that video, and they're like, yep, yeah, everything he said, 100%, yep. And since Hoplophile, he has a decent presence in the GunTuber universe, like, word got out there. And it's interesting to see now, because Crusader Arms has changed up how they build the Templar. They've done a few things, but and I still haven't got my
hands. They cut a bunch of weight off Gen 2, and that was that's my biggest complaint with their Gen 1 was just it was too heavy. It's too heavy for what it was. But yeah, they like so Crew Arms in the US is they sent out a bunch of testing guns to a bunch of different gun YouTubers, and there were some reviews where it was like, this isn't a very good review. Like this is someone got this for a couple of days. They put out a review, but they haven't really shot it a lot, and they don't really have like their thoughts formulated on pros and cons and that kind of thing. That's what you see with some of those incentivized reviews, or some of those reviews where they get a free gun or whatnot, right?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the double-edged swords. One thing that I'm really glad that actually Grantham brought in, where he states his relationship with the company being reviewed. How the review came to be, and it's because it gives it that level of transparency for the person watching. But if a company sends you a gun, you got a gun, but you also don't want to bite the hand that feeds. But also you want to pass on interesting, or you want to pass on your actual thoughts of the platform, how it acted. And, you don't want, again, it's just not biting the hand that feeds, but also not pushing a product that clearly needs some work done to it. It's a very fine line that needs to be walked. What are your thoughts on that?
It depends where the product is in its development. I've gotten stuff that's been early before, and I said, this is wrong. This is wrong. I would do this way or this way, and give that feedback back. Right. I think with something like the High Point, as an example, like Grand Thumb did a decent video on that, calling it out as crap. He didn't really get into the details why it was crap, though. So I had an article out a year ago. I forgot I didn't do a video on it. I finally did my video on it. I dove into like, hey, this is specifically why it's crap, because the design's stupid, the materials are bad, and they need to update. They could make that gun even cheaper. That could be a cheaper gun than it is right now. If they cut out some of the extras that they don't need, spring loaded butt pad, it comes with a sling. It comes with, the weirdest trigger lock you've ever seen in your life. Why even bother making it? Just use someone else's, and it comes with a couple of other things with it. Front sight that's adjustable for elevation, a rear sight that's also adjustable for elevation. Why the fuck are these both adjustable? Why just make a fixed front sight and just use the adjustable rear sight? That's fine. That kind of thing. So when you're putting that kind of thing in that gun, it could be better. And so I put that into that video. I didn't give that feedback to Kel-Tec to High Point. But some of the other gun manufacturers I have. So the Canadian ones, if I get a gun that's for testing or something like that, I'll tell them what's wrong with it, and I'll put it in my review too. And then usually what'll happen, Gen 2 will come out, and that'll have like the fixes in it. Like the Crusader Arms, like that Gen 2 is pretty much like everything that was wrong with their first one, have they fixed in the second one. I haven't had enough time on it to see if it's any good, to see if it's like better than, some of the other ones out there, but I don't know.
When I saw the videos come out with the Gen 2, it definitely seemed, at least aesthetically, that, because again, I have no time on a Gen 2. I've probably put 20, 30 rounds through someone's Gen 1, and it was a heavy beast. And what was funny is the guy that gave it to me, who owned it, the guy's jacked. His biceps are the size of my thighs. And he's like, this is a heavy gun. I'm like, dude, you can bench press me for warm up before you go to the gym. And this is you saying that. It was a heavy gun. But seeing that there's not screws and bolts all over the place, all over the receiver and the gun. That's kind of cool to see. They moved the charging handle to a spot where you can now mount optics wherever on the upper rail.
Yeah, that's a good idea too.
Yeah. Funny story about the High Point carbine though. So a buddy of mine who works in the gun store got one just to fuck around at the range, you know, just to see what it would be like. And he takes it to the range and he's using the iron sights and everything's curving off to the left. And he's like, what the hell's going on here? So puts down a sandbag, you know, sits on a bench, puts down a sandbag, and everything's going off to the left. And he's like, okay, like, what the hell? So he's just like, this gun, not touching it anymore, clears it, takes it back to the gun store, disassembles it. The barrel was curved to the left. Like, he showed me the photo where, like, you look down the barrel, and then at the end of it, you just see half a moon of daylight coming out of the business end. He's like, what the shit? Like, I personally pulled this thing out of the fucking box when it got off the truck. And it's not like the box was all damaged or anything either. Like, the box was pristine condition. And he's like, oh, wow, yeah.
Someone ran this over with a forklift and then put it back on the rack.
Yeah, dude, like, that's the only thing that would have explained it. And he showed me the targets and everything. And, like, this guy's, it's my shooting mentor. Like, he's a terrific shooter. Like, and he's just like, I've never been so frustrated because I was doing, like, I know I was doing everything right. I'm shooting that gun. And then I go to something and, like, it's going all over the place. And I grab whatever gun else I brought to the range and I'm shooting dead on. I'm hitting it. Yeah. It's like, ooh, yeah, the curse of the High Point strikes again.
Well, with mine, they've got a threaded muzzle on it. I put a muzzle brake on mine, and I was getting baffle strikes on it. It's not the brake's fault. It's the High Point's fault. Because it's got a threaded muzzle. Okay, I've got a 9mm brake. I screw the 9mm brake on. Great. Times out. Great. And I start shooting. I'm like, I got to adjust my scope. Buddy that's shooting next to me is like, I'm getting like shit sprayed at me every time you fire. I'm like, oh, I know what this is. I know exactly what this is.
Oh, yeah, the High Point. Yeah,
sure enough, the bullets were striking the baffles on it. So I had to pull it off and re-zero. And I wonder if my barrel is not straight.
Dude, take a look. I like, because it would be hilarious. Like, let me know once you take a look, because it would be funny if two of the people that I've talked to about it. Oh, he's grabbing it now.
It's the advantage of having a gun room, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, all you have to do is just reach behind you. It's, yeah. Yeah, Flannel Danny's video on it was great.
That's straight.
Yeah. This one was like, I'll try and find the photo of it and send it to you after. But, like, this thing was just... Maybe, like, it was, like, the guy who was making that High Point in the factory that day just watched the movie Wanted. And he's like, you know what? Everyone tries to curve the bullet like in the movie Wanted. I'm gonna give this guy a freebie. Like,
I can make this happen.
Yeah, yeah. With the power of modern machining and me just not giving a hoot, let's fucking make this happen.
Wow.
So you talked that you got your pal back in the early 2000s there. What got you into guns?
I've been into guns like all my life. I've been like hunting when I was like five, and you know, going around with a BB gun to start with, and then even from probably 10, I was shooting gophers with a 22 out with my grandma, like shooting gophers on the farm or shooting squirrels on my own and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I guess it would have started with hunting when I was really young. When I got older, I went to China for 4 years, and then after I came back, I got into shooting more and handguns. But then what do you do with a handgun? You go to the range, you shoot it at some paper that's like 25, 50 yards away. Who cares? It's boring, right? And then I got into three gun, and that's when everything changed, because three gun was like, oh, I'm not good at shooting a rifle. I'm terrible at shooting a shotgun, and my handgun is downright embarrassing. Now I know where I need to improve, and I can see that it is possible to improve, and these guys are shooting good. So how do I get to be shooting that well, right? So that was a big change for me, I guess.
Competition being a big driver. Yeah. I know there's quite a few dudes out there that I've met, that, you know, when I got into guns that I met through work and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, only take their guns out maybe 2-3 times a year, where like for me it's just like every other week I'm like, yeah, let's go out, let's go to the range. Yeah, when you go to a competition and you have some, when you have another human being to measure yourself against, whether it's in your same category slash class slash division, mm-hmm. or even if they're, you know, in some other division, but they're just absolutely killing it and burning it down, it sets that healthy competition fire inside of yourself. Or like when you go into a course, like when I did some of the courses back with Veritac, there was like, I always went in knowing like, all right, I'm a competent shooter. I know what I'm doing. I can get a 1-inch grouping of 10 rounds of 9mm at 3 meters. No problem. But then you have someone else there that would just absolutely burn down a target. Just get like a fucking 10mm grouping of 9mm rounds at 3 meters. And just when you have that other person to measure yourself to, just it just makes you want to do better. And competitions are fucking phenomenal for that.
Yeah, that's what it was for me, shooting with my buddies and wanting to beat them. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really competitive and I didn't want to lose. And you go to your first match and you know, fat old dudes are just stomping you into the dirt with their times. And it's like, okay, well, there's some improvement to be made here. So, that's what drove me.
I've seen that happen too, like at the Brutality series. I've seen dudes who are absolutely just kitted out to the tens and just get humbled by someone rocking a Condor plate carrier and, you know, a Gen 1 WK180C. Like, and
as long as it runs.
If it seats, it eats. And if it runs, it guns. Like, and then you just see those people walk away, go, you know, like, fuck, all right, I need to do better. And then you see them come back to the next competition and they're just like, yep, I did better. But this person, like, yeah, like there's, you'll never fully reach the level you want to, but that's good because it always keeps you going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can, I like to record. So if I can either run like a GoPro or have someone just record me on my phone, I like to do that because when I wasn't like the best in my division, I would compare against other people who posted their videos. Oh, okay. Let's see. How'd you do this stage so quickly? Oh my God, his transitions are way faster than mine, or his foot speed is way faster. Okay, I got to improve that. But now that, like, I'm a pretty good 3-gun shooter. I don't have to compare. I can't compare my times against other people to see where I'm leaving time behind. But I still record just to watch and just do self-critique.
Yes, which is very, like, very important thing to do. When I did a couple of my courses, I just tossed my phone in my plate carrier and just watched, all right, let's watch my reloads here. All right, let's watch my target transitions. Let's watch that. And then, yeah, having a camera on you, whether it's GoPro, Contour, just slapping your cell phone on your plate carrier or having someone record you, seeing what you're doing wrong and how you can improve, like, it's just, it's worth its weight in gold. When you see what you're doing from a third-person perspective, you learn so much about what you're doing.
Yeah.
I learned, like, I'm leaning to my left. Why the fuck am I doing that? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we had a firearms trainer, Joe Farewell come onto our podcast just recently here. And he was talking about, we showed him some, his one of his specialties is like watching match footage and giving critiques. And, Kyle is one of the other hosts on there. We're both pretty competent 3-gun shooters. We'll be like top 2, top 3 kind of thing at every match we shoot. He was watching one of Kyle's videos and he's like, now you need to move to your right, but your hips are pointed to the left. Your hips should be pointed to the right so that after you're done shooting that, you can explode to the next position that you need to go. He's like, I didn't notice that, never noticed that. But like that one little tip was so interesting to see. And yeah, experts who know what to look for can find little things like that all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excuse me. Agreed. I've had similar situations too, where they're just like, yeah, like it's always the hips too. Once he said that, because when I was doing some transition stuff, they're like, look at what your body's doing. Your body's all twisted and contorted. You're putting tension on your body, which is fucking up. So your stance is fucked up, which means that your arms are going to be fucked up, which means that your grip's going to be fucked up, which also means that, like, if your body's torqued, so is, like, everything's all torqued and twisted. Look at what you're doing. Where if you just simply pivoted on the balls of your feet, got your hips in line. And they're like, do it again. And I did that. I'm like, oh, fuck. Oh, my God. Just the universe brain explosion meme right there. I'm like, yes.
Got that natural point of aim going. And yeah.
Yeah. Once you, and it's little things like that. And you don't even realize it because you're just, when it's competition, when the timer's going and you're racing for that time. You go a little bit of tunnel vision mode a little bit and you don't realize it because you're so concentrated on getting those rounds on paper and beating the clock. But, that's where, you don't realize that your body's actually kind of working against you. And, once you know that, once you learn from your mistakes and then, you take that home, dry fire, practice, go to the range, practice some more, practice it nice and slow, build your way up. Like, having that third person perspective, always just, it's amazing what someone pointing something so simple that you didn't realize can do to you. I love it.
Third person's great for that. Great for the foot position, great for the hips and all that kind of stuff. First person I like for reloads and seeing where the person's looking. So if I'm firing, and then I look and fire and then move, that last shot was off. Right. And you can see that sometimes. Oh, you started looking before you've let that last shot loose, and no wonder you were down one or missing a hit on that target.
Yeah, got a C zone when you were clearly ready for. Yeah, when you had an A zone lined up.
Yeah, and sometimes it's interesting because you'll see like yourself looking at a target that's not shot, and then move on, and it's like, why didn't you shoot that one? Didn't see it. It was right in front of you. You were looking right at it.
But yeah. Technology, it's amazing what it can do to help us diagnose what we're doing wrong. And I mean, with GoPros and stuff like that too. I mean, when I was at Winter Brutality last March, I was running a GoPro some of the times. I'm like, I think I fucked up there, and then connected my GoPro to my phone and I watched what I did. And it's just like, so it's instant feedback right there. I'm like, oh yeah, no, you did that dumb. Next time, don't do it that dumb again. Technology, man. So back onto your YouTube there. So you kind of talked about, you being not fully satisfied with the reviews that was being put out in your traditional media, your print media and stuff like that. Was it just kind of like all right, screw it, I'm doing this myself. I see the gap in the market, or was it something that you kind of built up to eventually along, after a little bit?
Well, I started with articles, so just writing stuff and, I'm motivated by success. So I saw I was getting views on it. Oh, lots of people reading this. Okay, well, I'll keep doing that. And people kept asking, like, are you going to do YouTube? And I'm like, I don't really want to. I'd rather just write and do the photography. But there was a couple of products where it makes more sense to use YouTube than write an article about it, right? I would argue that for a rifle review, you don't really get much from the video. But for like some products, seeing the video, seeing it in space, like it definitely makes a difference. Seeing, the mags load in it, seeing the, if you want to complain about something, sometimes those little things you want to complain about are easier to see in a video than they are in a print. So I started doing them as like a companion to the articles where I do video and the article and, they had their pros and cons each, but, and I still do that today. So, most of the time I'll write the article first and then take the gun shooting, do some stuff with it, update the article afterwards and then put the video out. And it was just because again, there was that gap in the market in terms of people doing like good reviews, that stuff that I would consider good. And even today, like if I look for reviews on some guns, Epic Arms does a good job. They're a Canadian YouTuber, and they do a review I like. Technical, deep dive. Here's the design. Here's the inner mechanism of this thing. I like those reviews. There's the Grand Thumb reviews can be good. Sometimes they're more just flash and not so much about the use of it. Hickok 45s, his are pretty high level. He doesn't dive in deep. He won't like disassemble a gun on you. He'll shoot some steel, talk about it for a bit, shoot some more steel. And then some of the other guys out there, it's just all positives and you'll never hear any negatives. Those ones still exist and there's still some big channels that do it, but Epic Arms does a good review. And there's a couple others like that really dive deep into the gun and talk specifically why they like it or not like it in like objective terms, instead of just subjective, like, oh, I don't like the high point because it's cheap and cheap feeling. No, it's cheap feeling and it's designed poorly. They put money into things that they shouldn't be putting money into, or, you know, straight barrels.
I do like the, you know, Alex Epic Arms. He does a terrific job. Like, yeah, he goes deep. He talks about it, and he is, you know, it's safe to say that he is objective. You know, like, I don't like this because the grip at this point feels weird, or the texture, like he might say at someone, like, I personally don't like this point, but it might be good for you. I don't know. He does a very good job. And he's grown quite a good following as well. I had something else to say there. But,
and technical. He talks about the technical points of the firearm, not just like the whole thing as a package, right? Yet you do have to break it down and say, okay, well, you know, for a hunter, this part's okay. This part's okay. I don't really like this part. You know, like on the 3.34, it's a really great gun, but these right hand safeties, like on the side here, this is the dumbest idea ever. Remington started doing these with the 700s. Like, why am I supposed to like go like that and go like that when I'm? Why is this? Am I supposed to use my finger, like trigger finger, to do this? Just a stupid spot for a safety. Like, put a tang or put it somewhere that's easier to grab onto, right?
Yeah,
but. Yeah,
it's one thing I hate. I hate that about my Tika T3, where they put the safety on it, is just not into, especially for a precision rifle. It's a very dumb place. When Jimmy, my shooting mentor, we were doing some dry firing with our precision rifles, showing me the stance, walking me through everything, and he's like, "All right, let's talk about, like, you know, until you get a proper, you know, get a chassis for precision shooting, you're stuck with your Tika T3 hunting style stock." But he's like, "All right, show me the grip." And he's like, "All right, now you want to have it where your thumb's able to actuate the safety, yada, yada, yada." I'm like, "Dude, look at where it is." And he just takes a look and he just goes, "Oh, fuck, that's dumb." I'm like, "Yeah, it is." And he's like, "All right, well, we'll work on that at some point." But yeah, no, that is an objective thing, especially when it comes to body ergonomics, movement ergonomics, when it comes to shooting, there's so much information out there these days. It's still kind of the mind. Wonder, you know, the mind boggles at just like you guys make guns for a living. How come you guys can figure this out? Like, come on, guys. Like,
yeah, why is it? It's probably because it's convenient to put there, but I don't care about the convenience. I care about being able to use this. And then the other thing that I often harp on, that I don't really hear a lot of other people harping on, but for a hunting rifle, I want a quiet safety, because presumably I've got this thing on safe loaded when I'm walking around hunting. If I see a deer, if I'm sitting down out for a while and I see a deer pop out 10 yards, I don't want to hear a click as the thing like flips on off safe. And I need to be able to do that quietly. And it's not possible with this one. It's a very clicky safety. Whereas some other ones aren't so clicky, like the Tang safety on this one.
Yeah.
No, this one is pretty clicky still. I haven't put this one close to the mic yet.
Very quiet is the Ruger Precision rifle, the where it's kind of like it takes AR 10 mags and stuff like that, but it has an AR style selector, so super
and
easy.
You can ride that one, you can ride it to make it quiet, whereas that one, even if you ride it, it's still loud and clicky. But, you know, I've shot deer from like 5 yards away. I've been out when I call them, I sit there, and then I look over and there's a stupid deer like right below me looking up at me. And at that time I had a Browning BLR. The nice thing about the BLR, just pull the hammer back, just a little click, just a tiny little click, and that's all I needed. And the deer didn't run away. I don't like clicky safeties. Long story short.
Well, that tracks too. Like for hunting, because that, deer are going to hear things like that. And that's the last thing you want, is to spook a deer just by taking the safety off. Like, little things like that. And I mean, let's be honest, a majority of the guns marketed in Canada are aimed towards the hunting community. It's probably safe to say that 90%, if not more, of the guns that are marketed here are for the hunting community.
Yeah. But like for some other guns, like it, maybe it doesn't matter, right? Like on the GSG, I don't care how clicky the safety is, and it doesn't matter. Oh, it clicks. Yeah. I don't care. I'm not hunting with this thing. It's, this is, does this look like a hunting rifle? But no. I also don't like the throw on this one. It's like it's kind of hard to reach.
It's super long. Yeah.
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 There's a 3D printed one that I'm probably gonna print and put on this one, so I don't have to, or my kid doesn't have to reach that far.
Like I don't have the biggest hands, but I don't have the smallest hands. And like, yeah, even for me, like you have to get, you almost feel like you have to like dislocate your thumb to get your thumb up on it and then pull it. Yeah.
You thing. Shouldn't but have I mean, to break your grip to turn the safety off of a gun.
Exactly. Yeah. That. Yes. Thank you. So, you know, looking back, you've been doing this, you know, your YouTube channel has been up for what, 11 years now?
Something like that. Yeah.
in that decade plus, what are some of the things that you've learned in that time?
Oh, everything, I guess. Because a lot of the stuff that I was talking about before, I didn't know as much about it. Like I became an expert on budget bolt action hunting rifles. Like I'll hold my own on those. I know what good budget bolt action rifles, and on like an air-ish rifle, like I know those pretty well. I don't know them all though. I don't know the Lockhart Raven. I haven't tested one of those things out yet. There's a couple of other ones that I haven't tested out yet. I know the WK platform pretty well. I would say that it's not really possible to make good money targeting the Canadian audience for this. Mm-hmm. When I say good money, I'm like, you could never live on this. I can pay for some ammo and that kind of thing with my channel, but it's never going to be a full-time gig. Mm-hmm. Unless you did other stuff, maybe if you did training and that kind of thing as well. But
yeah.
Other things I've learned, I don't know, like not so much from the channel, but just from hunting, like all cartridges work. Like pretty much every centerfire cartridge made for hunting deer works just fine. And there's no difference.
No. If you're using 6.5, it's not nearly as versus 7 Remick, but you're 3. Yeah, no, yeah, that I love hearing that discussion. When I was at work, sometimes you'd be around the dudes who hunt deer. Like, no, this is, you need to use 270. No, fuck you, you retard. You need to use, it's just like, my brother in Christ, does it put a hole in the deer that and then it drops it instantly so that it's a painless death for it? That's all you fucking, unless we're talking like bigger game, like elk or caribou or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But for deer, like.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I've shot deer at 600 meters. I've shot deer at 6 meters, and the caliber does not matter. The cartridge does not matter. Anything you can legally hunt with is probably going to be fine. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be some caveats to that. Yeah. 22-250 with a really light varmint bullet probably isn't the right thing to use for deer, but everything common, like everything you can get in, like a Savage Axis in, is going to work just fine.
Yeah. Perfect platform. Yeah. That's a very, yeah. If Savage Axis makes it or has a platform for it, yeah, it's doable. Yeah, it's
probably works just fine. Yeah, there's a couple of areas where you can buy once, cry once. And there's a couple of areas where you can definitely cheap out. I've cheaped out on all kinds of things. Mag pouches for competition shooting, you can get the AliExpress knockoffs and they work just fine for pistol pouches, that kind of thing. Oh yeah, they're fine. They're absolutely fine. The belt, no. You need to get like a decent belt. But the mag pouches are fine. I'm trying to think of other stuff. Cheap scopes aren't worth it. Cheap spotting scopes, don't even bother. Cheap binos, don't even bother. Because the problem is there needs to be a minimum price for the optical quality to be good enough to match the magnification. Mm-hmm. So if you get a really cheap spotting scope, it doesn't matter that it magnifies up to 60 because it's just a soupy mess you're looking through. It's no good. So
ask me how I know.
Well, everyone has to buy a cheap spotting scope and discover like, oh, I took this to the range, I can barely even see the bullet holes at 100. Even if I magnify it up to 60, you still can't see it. Oh, actually, my rifle scope, I find it easier even though it's only a 3-9. That's because the 9x on that thing is clear, the glass is really good, right? So yeah, there's, but that being said, you don't need a super fancy scope for hunting. I've, believe it or not, I have a package scope on my hunting rifle back there
on that Savage Axis, the shitty Weaver one it comes with. And I shot a deer at this year at 300 with it. It doesn't matter. It's nicer. It's nicer to shoot. If I was a PRS shooter, I'd want better equipment for sure. But if I'm hunting and I got to crank a deer at 300, that's not a particularly challenging thing to do. If you've, you know, got the skills and you've got the steady rest and you've got the distances figured out and all that kind of stuff.
I think, yeah, it all comes down to kind of context there. I think is the, like, yeah, if you're occasionally plinking, then like, yeah, it makes sense for someone when it comes to like, you know, budget optics. Like, yeah, I'm taking this out as a party piece when we go, when I take a few friends up into the back nine for a little bit, or every, you know, the 2 to 3 times a year that I might put a box of ammo through my gun, it it tracks. But if, yeah, if you're taking the hobby in a somewhat amateur professional, you know, that you're taking it somewhat seriously, or you know, you're competing, or you want to you want to just really expand your knowledge base or just your potential of what you're able to do with it, then yeah, like, you know, spend the extra couple bucks. I truly am, and I've learned it back from when I airsofted up to now being a gun owner and a few other things in life, but buy once, cry once. Save up, you know, even though it's fucking difficult during these days when you know, a bag of limes costs like $14. Fuck me for loving citrus.
Look at this, Mr. Money Bags buying a whole bag of limes. Come on.
Dude, I miss the days where it's just like, yeah, 5 limes for a dollar. Fuck yeah. Everything's getting citrus in it. Now it's just like, yeah, Pat, you love citrus. How much do you really love citrus? So much that you, yeah, oh, got it. Yeah.
It's a very specific inflation measure you've got here.
I do everything, like, because limes, like, I've loved citrus since I was a kid, especially lime. And so, how the economy's going to shit when a bag of key limes costs fucking $10 at Save-On. It's like, God, yeah. Yeah. When it comes to, it's all context is a good way to put it. Like, you've probably had the same conversation where people reach out to you like, what should I get for blank? And they expect you to just give you like the most perfect answer, or they're expecting an answer just off that question. Where I've had
usually to, like, they don't even say what it's for.
Well, you have to ask. Okay. Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay. Well, you're like, yeah, what kind of scope should I get? Okay. Well, what do you plan on doing with it? What platform is it for? What is the context of what you're going to be using it behind? I've had that people with certain pieces of gear and various things. It's just like, all right, give us the context, and then we can give you some of the information that we know from there. Context with everything in life is super duper important. And I think, yeah, context, a lot of times people imply it, but they assume that you know it, but until it's actually passed on, people really never know the context. Super important. People learn to pass on context.
Yeah. I mean, I think buy once, cry once on pistols, for a competition pistol is absolutely what you should do. I ran through like a bunch of pistols before I ended up at my Shadow 2, and I was like, oh, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm never using anything else. This is fine. But, before that I had, an M&P, an FNS, a Glock, maybe some others that I'm not thinking about. But, and then I got a Shadow 2 and I was like, oh, no matter. Like, I threw money at my Glock 34, like tungsten this and the springs that, and it's just not as good. It's just not even close to as good.
I love my Glock. Glock gang for life. The 1911 has 2 world wars, but the Glock, and now the High Points have untold numbers of turf wars that have been won. So it's hard to it's hard to beat those.
They got that the street cred for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, like how? Yeah. but you know, I fired some CZ Shadows and Shadow 2s, and when it comes to competition, like, you can probably drop 2-3 grand into a Glock, making it quote unquote competition ready, and it still just will not be as good.
Get the weight in the right place. Like, the CZ's got a lot of weight like right underneath the barrel where you need it, and you'll never get it into a Glock there.
No.
Unless you, maybe if you got like a light and then took all the light stuff out and filled it with lead, then you might be able to get that weight there.
That's one of the reasons why I like, so on my Glock, I run a Surefire X300. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge, significant, noticeable weight difference, you know, when it comes to, regaining your target acquisition, getting your sight picture back on target with the light versus without the light. Like, holy shit, huge. But yeah, like,
yep,
you'd have to take an X300 or some sort of light platform. Yeah, literally take all the guts out and pour cement in there and let it set for a day or two, then put it back on. Or lead.
That's what one of the gamier competitors in the U.S. did when there was some rule changes in USB. This is a while back, where you could use lights, and he would get a light and then just fill it with lead, and it would be like lots of weight in there just to keep it steady on target.
Yeah,
but anyways, shadows, fantastic. Shadows. Locks are good too, and really, it's not going to make that much difference in your game either. Like with the handgun game, the handguns are actually great in Canada because they're all 10 rounds and they're all like the barrel lengths are all going to be about the same.
Yeah.
And in competition, it's not going to make a difference. The rifle is, and the shotgun is really where the difference is made, in gear, at least. Mm-hmm. You can't beat someone if you have a malfunctioning rifle or a rifle that doesn't take, the LAR mags or larger, well. Mm-hmm. And for a shotgun, semi-automatic shotguns aren't reliable. You have to get one that's good and reliable and feeds well, and you need to run that. Now those are $1,000 plus.
Oh, easily.
I guess the Stoger M3K is fairly decently priced. They're right around $700-$800. And those are pretty good too. But most people are looking at the Benelli's or the Beretta 1301, mm-hmm, or in my case, the Browning A5, because it's got that auto load, mm-hmm, which is magic. It makes for some magic math because you run it dry. And with a 3.5-inch chamber, now my tube can fit 7 2¾-inch shells and one in the chamber. Well, I run the damn thing dry. I grab a quad load. I stroke it into the bottom. There's 4 into the gun. I grab another quad load. I pump that in there. Now I've got 7 in the tube, 1 in the chamber, and 4 seconds have gone by. And I've got 8 rounds in that gun. I'm shooting again.
Hey guys, Pat and Taylor from the MCS Podcast here, and we want to say a thank you to our new sponsors.
Nuts Off and Grey Fox Strategic, two Canadian-based and RAN companies, want to help you, the listener, have easier access to their gear.
Taylor and I have both been running Grey Fox Strategic holsters since before we even met.
And Nuts Off has some terrific scrim and nylon products that the modern Canadian shooter will find very useful.
Want to save some money on a Grey Fox Strategic holster? Use discount code MCSP10. That's Michael Charlie Sierra Papa 10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
And do you want to blend in better with some Nuts Off scrim? Use discount code MCS Michael Charlie Sierra at checkout to save 10% on your order.
And we also want to thank Auspec War for jumping aboard as well.
Everybody wants to look cool at the range, but you can't look cool if you're dead.
Check out Auspec War for all of your individual first aid kits, medical supplies, and training needs.
Don't let your worst day be your last day, and get with it.
And we can't forget our longest running sponsor, Misty Mountain Supply.
Use code MCS Podcast at checkout to save 5% off your drippy SERP order.
We get no financial kickback from you using these codes.
We just want you to have easier access to fantastic gear brought to you by great Canadian companies.
Now let's get back to the show. I'm doing actually a shotgun, my first shotgun competition next weekend, and so I've been practicing a little bit of dual loads. I'm starting off easy, learning just how to dual load first. So my camera guy that I do stuff with, Lloyd, fuck me. Like he just started competitions back in like September, October, and watching him behind a shotgun is like watching an eagle just jump off a tree, grab a salmon out of a rushing river, and then fly off into the sunset. Like, it is just majestic watching him do it. So he has the Mossberg JM950 Pro, I think. Mm-hmm. And before that he had a Mossberg 500, and just him talking about, you know, a lot of the stuff he said just was super smart. So it just went right over my head. But watching him go into the different intricacies of this gun and that gun, and like you're able to do this with this gun. Oh, and I got a shotgun that's ready for 3.5-inch shells or 3-inch shells, but I'm running 2 3/4, and I put this mag tube on there, and if I'm able to get five 5.9 3-inch shells in there, but I'm not able to get that sixth one completely in there. So it's good. And then just like him doing all this math, and then he at one point actually brought up something really smart when he contacted the BC CFO, to which even they went, fuck, we don't know. And what it was is, so if I remember correctly, his Mossberg 500 tube extension was able to fit with his 950, if I remember correctly, or something like that. But he's just like, oh, now I have a semi-auto that can take more than five rounds, except this is a magazine designed for a different gun. And he's just, and so and that's what he's just like, I want, because he's like, when you take a cross mag, it's designed for a pistol, but you're able to put it into the MCR WK180 Bren, you're able to put it into a center fire rifle. And the government has basically gone on record saying, sneaky, tricky. We don't like that, but you guys are technically right. And he contacted the BC CFO, the CFO, and said, it is what I'm doing, the same thing. And he explained it, sent photos and everything. He's like, this magazine is technically designed for a pump action shotgun. It just happens to fit with no modification on this. So even the BC CFO said, fuck, I don't know. He's like, I'm like, this is a very interesting point you bring up. I'm going to look into this for you, because this is, you're using the same logic and reasoning that has been proven to be okay, even though certain agencies don't like it. You know, you gamed the game to the point where you're now winning, kind of deal. So I think he's still waiting back to hear on that. But when he told me that argument, like he listed it out in like a 9-part DM message to me on Instagram, and eventually,
I think he'd get. The part that might screw him on that is that there's already a magazine tube on his gun. That's an extension he's adding, unless it was a replacement for that original, like a full tube replacement for the original. Well, that would be different. Like if you could get something that replaced the whole tube on the bottom and you crank the old one off and you put a 10 rounder or a 12 rounder and it was one piece, then, and it was that one piece was designed for the pump action, you know, Philly Roots, I believe. But if it's an extension, you are modifying your mag to extend it. You can extend the pump action. You can't extend the semi-auto. I can't put a base plate. I can't put base plates on my pistol. But they're not designed for something else. That's interesting.
It's a very, like everyone he's brought this argument to. Like that was my exact, the face you're making right now was my face for about 2 hours as I just sat on the couch just like, fuck. Like, yeah, like. Because, with being gun owners in Canada, we all, like, it's the unfortunate thing, but we always have to assume anything fun and cool is prohibido, because that's just the way it's been. But when you find someone where they just find that little loophole, it's just like, fuck. All right, like, I don't, because, you know, it's just, you might have found it, but I don't want to say, yeah, do it, because I don't want to tell you, you know, basically give you my essentially uneducated opinion to go break the law kind of deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, yeah, one of the, it's a Canadian gun laws, just the best gun laws in the world. They make so much sense. But yeah, onto shotguns. Yeah. Like it's, I'm looking forward to next weekend because I know I'm going to walk.
What are you running?
My CZ712.
Okay. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. I've only maybe put like 20-30 rounds through it. And then, so the course of fire that day is 65 birds, 5 slug, 5 buck. And then also my buddy who's taking me down, he's running it too, because we're actually doing some stuff with another group the next day, which is also going to involve 200 rounds of shotgun for that too. But it's just like, oh, this gun's about to get broken the fuck in. And it's gonna, oh boy, is it ever. It's going to be...
What's this gun a clone of? Is it a clone?
I don't exactly know. All I know is that it takes Beretta compliant parts, so I haven't deep dived too much into it. I just wanted a semi-auto shotgun that had, you know, I looked online, had some pretty favorable reviews, and the few times I've run it, I've only had two failure to extracts. But then I took it apart after, and I was a dumbass and didn't lube it up. And it's, you know, it's a semi-auto shotgun. You need to have lubrication. But I don't know. It's so far it's done me no wrong. And, yeah.
Activity extended. I'm just looking it up right now. Decent trigger pull. If it's a Turkish shotgun, like it has to be a design of something. Like, so the Turk semis, the first ones were Weatherby. They were Weatherby SA08s and PA08s that they had taken that design and been inspired by it directly. Yeah, you could swap parts between them. So if you're saying this matches a Beretta, I'm just wondering which Beretta that nose, that cap on the end looks very much like that Hooglu Renova one.
Mm.
Is it inertia or gas?
Gas.
Gas is faster.
Light
and heavy. Oh, interesting. Okay. The Weatherby SA08 does that as well. Different piston.
Looking at this, I'm just reading a few things online. One person believes that it's a clone of the Franchi 612 minus the rotary bolt face. So, okay. If that's the case, the Beretta Extrema is designed after the Franchi 612. So,
yeah, maybe. Hmm. Yeah, anyways, yeah, it doesn't matter. You're going to have a ball.
$750 out of Canadian Tire.
Mm-hmm.
So, only thing that I wish is that it had a rail on the receiver to mount a small little red dot, but I'll just take that. I've been talking to a local gunsmith. He's like, yeah, pop by sometime. I'll let you know if I'm able to tap and die one in there. But like, if not, the main purpose of the shotgun is for it to be a camp shotgun. So I've got a flashlight on there, and you know, that's that. I do at some point want to get a Beretta 1301 because they're fucking beautiful. And
they're great. They're great. You won't use your other shotgun if you end up getting one, except for, you know, camp stuff where you're going to beat it up, because the 1301s are light. They shoot fast. You can't overrun them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't shoot faster than the action can cycle the rounds.
Mm-hmm.
I can shoot faster than my A5 can cycle the rounds on it. I can shoot faster than a Stoger M3K or M3500. I can shoot faster than a Benelli Super Black Eagle. Any of those inertials, I can outrun the action on it, but I can't with the gas, specifically with the Beretta 1301. Is very fast.
Yeah. Even Grantham, when he did his video, he's like, yeah, you cannot outshoot this gun. It is just mechanically impossible. Just like, oh shit. Those Italians, man, they know how to make a good shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things with YouTube, I've got a few buddies who make some content as well. But everyone's got the one video that they're just super proud of that just sticks out in their mind as kind of like their magnum opus. Like, what for you, what video would that be?
Oh, I don't know. I've done so many different videos about so many different things. Some of them got popular, and I don't know why they got popular. So there's some of those. I don't know. That BCL Siberian one was fun.
Yeah.
I like shitting on guns every once in a while, and I think it deserved it. Similarly did that for the Remington 770. I'll put my flag in the sand on that one because that was a shit gun, and I call it out as such, and it's just got like almost 100% hate on that video, because when people look up reviews on guns, it's because they already bought it.
Yes.
Already bought the gun, and I'm telling them that their gun is bad, and people don't like that.
They take it personally, dude.
Uh-huh.
You kind of brought it up there. We've talked about the BCL Siberian SRV2. Let's because both you and I, like, we handled the same gun. We both shot it. I sent it to you after I did my 1,000 rounds through it, and then you tried. Well, it did, but fuck, did it ever need help? And then you did. You did what about?
I shot a match
well?
With it.
Yeah,
I shot a match, and I did 300 rounds, something like that.
Yeah,
it was frustrating.
Very. And people took it like it's very interesting. You know, again, in Canada, we're very limited to what we can have when it comes to 223 semi-automatic rifles that are mag fed. and you either have budget, you know, shall we say, which unfortunately isn't even that budget friendly. Like, you know, you look at the WK series, the MCRs, the BCLs, they're all between, you know, brand new between $1,600 and $2,100. Mm-hmm. You have the Sterling Arms R18s, which I've seen mainly favorable reviews about the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're heavy as all hell, like,
yeah,
and bulky, but they're relatively reliable. But, you know, you put this information out there and people, it seems like they take it personally. Cause and I'm going to put this out there so that everyone knows, when people traditionally review a gun and it gets an unfavorable review, you're not being personally attacked. Do not feel bad that you bought this gun and that some or many have had a bad time with it. It's just, here's our firsthand experience. We personally would not purchase this gun with our own money. And then people just go like, fuck you. I will smite you where you stand. It's just like, dude, I'm not calling you an idiot or a goober or anything. I'm just saying, this gun, for the context that we put it through and what we did with it, didn't do it. Now, that being said, I do know some dudes who have a BCL Siberian SRV2 who are well over 2,000 rounds through it, competition usage and whatnot, and failures they can count on one hand kind of deal. It's just, that's the frustrating thing too with the SRV2 is that it's much like the Gen 2, just much like the WK180Cs, you either get a good one or you get one that just should not have left the factory floor.
Yeah, the QC doesn't seem to be there. That's the best way to understand guns would be if you were like their warranty department or you worked at Cabela's and you could see how many of them went out the door and how many of them came back. Because with that Remington 770, when I brought it back, I'm like, this thing doesn't work. It doesn't chamber the ammunition. It's supposed to be all chamber. He's like, oh, I'm not surprised. that was his reaction. I'm like,
wow.
Can I just get a refund for this thing? Can I just buy something else? Because this was like a second or third one I tried testing. Third. And he's like, yeah, I'm just going to give you a refund for it. A lot of these things are coming back. You need that perspective. How many of them are coming back? Because I had a WK-180, the first gen. It was fine.
Yeah.
I ran 1,000 rounds through. I ran in competition. And then when the MCR came out, I sold it and I bought the MCR. Now, those WK-180s, those first gen, they had some problems, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the very first ones used a floating bolt handle that would chew up the inside, but otherwise was fine. It wouldn't break or anything like that. They had three other gens of bolt handles that would just snap and break and pistons and all sorts of other stuff. And I never saw any of it. And therefore, it didn't end up in my review. But at the same token, I've also had like complete lemon firearms or products that just don't work.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you got the Gen 2, which just, you know, the one that guys, we said it a few times on the show too. As fun as it is to poo-poo on the Gen 2 180C, it does appear that Kodiak is slowly but surely learning, because you look at the Gen 1 WKs, and it was receiver issues, charging handle issues, and the occasional piston that was blowing up and dying. Now with the Gen 2, they've got it down to where it's just the piston is the weak point. I personally have watched two of them explode. Both on camera, fun times. But then again, I have a homie, I think his Gen 2 180 easily has 1,700 rounds. When he runs it hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been perfectly fine. Like, he hasn't taken it apart. Like, where they say, like, when you buy this gun, the first thing you must do is take the gas block off and then torque and then Loctite everything. And then he hasn't done any of that and it works. So when they eventually release a Gen 3 180C, hopefully that thing's going to be all good, because the only thing they have to really look at now is the piston. Except there is a company, little guy out of his garage, Wadi Precision, where he is making, I think it's a three-part piston.
Oh, that's what it was supposed to be from the start. That's what the SVT has, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he's machining and designing it. And the one thing I love about him is he's letting people know, if you get this product, you're a beta tester, you're a knowing beta tester. But he's currently, like, it looks promising, it looks great. You look at where he's beefed it up and it's in the spots where you traditionally see the piston on a Gen 2 brake.
Right on that spring ledge.
That's, yeah, right there.
That's the spot.
Every time. Every freaking time. Yeah, so hopefully with a Gen 3. But the MCR, I mean, like, actually, what sold me on my MCR that I've going on about 6,000 rounds through, no real issues. I did the upper receiver where the rear takedown pin sits.
Spread out.
Yeah. I got my first receiver, had a hairline crack. I'm like, oh, fuck it, warranty. They sent me a new one and cracked in the same spot. I'm just like, if I can keep on sending this back as many times as possible, it's just going to keep happening. There's not enough metal in that spot. There's a lot of stress there. But really, at this point, it's a cosmetic issue. But it's ran great for the most part. And again, your video, everything you showed, just like, all right, cool. Good info.
Mine is, I've continued to break parts on mine. My oldest shoots 3-gun and he uses that one as well. Mm-hmm. And he's broken it twice and broken it like proper broken it. I've broken it a couple of different times as well, or things have gone wrong on me on it. But that's just fun in the big city with, shooting competitions is you put a lot of rounds through and things break. We broke the upper where the hinge on the front there grabs onto.
Yeah.
He broke that mid-match. It was like it would fail on firing. So you'd rack it, and then he fired it and it came apart. So that was one. And then the other one was just this year. And this one, like, preventative maintenance might have caught it, but I try not to maintain the gas system on them, because if you fuck with the gas system, then you got to retorque those things down. And I like to punch them in. I use a center punch to punch the screws so that they can't move, right? Mm-hmm. That grub screw at the end holding the gas piston in, it must have slowly been walking out. And it popped out, and the piston and spring also came out the front. And
did turned you get into that on a video?
Straight pole. Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that video. That's a great video.
Yeah, sure did. So we broke that. I've had all sorts of other things happen with me. The barrel nut went loose on me. I was shooting a big major match, and my long range did not go well. And it was because my barrel nut was finger tight. That was it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I've been completely lucky and blessed. Like I say, my MCR is one of the 17 that was built on a Tuesday morning. No one's hungover. They fully show up to work expecting to do to build a gun. And that's like the one time I tried to touch the gas system. I think it was like after I broke it in, I put like 200 rounds through. I'm like, all right, let's clean it. Let's get, let's lube everything up, get it looking, get it looking all ready. And I tried taking out the gas block there, like the grub screw or the gas plug, pardon me, not the grub screw, the gas plug. And I just couldn't. And I'm just like, it was torqued right the fuck on there. I'm like, all right, I'm not touching it. So I think when I did that, I might have just given it, I don't know, just some sort of incentive, just, through the, I don't know. But my gas system has run very well. Like, again, it's one of 17
I haven't broke a piston yet.
Same. And fuck, who pointed that out? Someone out there, they have a Gen 2 180. And they have an MCR, and they took a set of calipers and they measured the pistons, and the MCR piston is actually thicker by like up to like half a millimeter or a millimeter in some spots. So it's a thicker piston. And he's like, yeah, cause he's like, oh, like I think his Gen 2 piston went down. He's like, oh fuck, I'll just take my MCR piston out, and it wasn't working. He's like, oh, time to bring out the calipers. Let's see what's going on here. That's one of the things that, has going for it, and you don't hear too often MCR pistons snapping like chopsticks. So
yeah, not often.
Yeah, it's
I don't see them.
Receiver stuff usually is what I hear, or occasionally gas plugs. But yeah,
mine's not coming off now. they give you a spare one in the bag, right? I'm like, oh my god, what kind of horrible like rigged thing am I gonna do to try to get a bolt in there, screw it in, and then cut it off but no, they give you one in the bag, so I just screwed the next one in, but I put like some Loctite, and I gave it the beans when I put it on there. It's not coming off
good. And here's like, you know, a dirty gas system just builds character for the gun.
It's self-cleaning.
Yeah, hey.
It'll clean itself out.
Yeah. Just run, you know, run some, if you run a match, then after that, just take some good, like, match ammo or something like that and just mag dump, a mag or two through that. You know, it'll help fucking clean it.
I'm not doing that. That sounds like too much work.
It's just like, you know, when you take your car out and just absolutely just rat fuck the shit out of it for a day, then after that, you know, just put some premium in the tank. You know, the car deserves it.
Just wash it.
Yeah, just wash it. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So another thing, you know, one of the other media projects you do, which we've kind of talked about, is the Slamfire podcast, which has been going on also for, about 11, 12 years as well.
Something like that, yeah.
For those that, I mean, fuck, everyone who listens to this podcast probably listens to that as well, but for the small amount that don't, tell them.
Slamfire Radio, it's just a Canadian gun podcast. We've been doing it for, well, it predates me, and the guys who started it are no longer on the show, but it just keeps going, going. we've been going since 2013, I think. I want to say 2013. And I've been on there since year two, 2015, maybe somewhere around there, maybe 10 years. Yeah.
Wow.
9 or 10, like a long time. Anyways, we've interviewed Hickok 45. We've had Ian from Forgotten Weapons on there. We've had really lots of the big names, and then some of the little names that were just like even better interviews. Right. Four people. We've got myself on there. We've got Kelly, who's an accomplished Maple Seed shoot boss. She was on New Shooter Canada when she was a new shooter. She's no longer a new shooter. She's very accomplished in Maple Seed. Does a lot of work for the CCFR and ladies groups and that kind of thing.
Nice.
We've got Mo, who's also an accomplished shooter. Shoots a lot of IPSC and shoots, I would say, like one or two matches a month.
Oh, wow.
All year for IPSC. I'm super jelly about how many matches he can make it out to. And he's doing Rimfire PRS now as well. Nice. And then we've got Kyle, who's an accomplished three-gun shooter. He's moved down to the U.S. and now he's doing USPSA, and he's introduced three-gun at his local club. And we live vicariously through him as he purchases American stuff that we can't get. Like subcompact pistols and compact holsters and that kind of thing for carrying your pistol around. And yeah, we don't get to do any of that.
Hey guys, look at this PMAG. Notice a little piece of shiny hardware that isn't on it. Oh, watch this. Four rounds, five rounds, six rounds, seven rounds, eight rounds. Yeah. I got homies who moved to the US too. And my buddy every now and then shows me his PMAGs. And he's like, yeah, dude, like, look how smooth and clean and how there's no weird, random, shiny, circular objects in it. So crazy. Also, this only cost me $10. How much? And it's just like, fuck you.
See the big difference on their belt. In three gun, you'll have four or five pistol mags, and you'll have, if you got coupled mags, you'll have at least two coupled mags on your belt, if not more. So if you're just running the 1030s, you're going to have four air mags. If you look at American's three gun belt, it'll have maybe two extra mags of pistol and maybe one extra for the rifle.
Yeah.
Because you're running 30 rounders or 45 rounders or 60 rounders if you're running D60s, right? So they don't need a lot of space on their belt for all that stuff.
Yeah. I bet you a lot of three gun shooters down in the US don't have the same hip problems that Canadian three gun shooters have. Because I've watched videos and dude will start off with either Magpul 45 rounder in it or a D60 and then maybe has one PMAG and then, and then you look at the shotguns and the tube, the mag extension on it is borderline touching the target at 10 meters away.
Yeah.
And then, they might have a few rounds to, do a double or to do a dual or a quad load at some point just to top themselves off and one or two pistol mags. It's just like, fuck you guys. So much.
Nice and light.
Yeah. When we had Tom Hesse come on, he talked about that, going to competitions in Thailand and Greece. And he's just like, you go there and people's IPSC belts aren't just covered 360 with CZ mags. It's just two, three mags maybe. But he's like, if I remember correctly, I think we were talking about at some point, he's like, Canadians are, you do notice they are a lot quicker at reloads. Because we purposely have to, lots of practice, not by choice.
Yeah.
So With you going on the Slam Fire Radio podcast, like, how did that come to be with you hopping on the show?
They had a guy who, Owen, who was leaving. He was just not as into it as much. And, they held, tryouts. They're like, hey, yeah, email the show if you want to go on. And I'd already been on a couple of times. I knew of them and I was like, oh, I want to be on your show as a guest. I want to talk about this. And they're like, okay. And so I'd done that a couple of times. And then they had asked to see who wanted to come on as host. And I'm like, yeah, I would come on and do that. And they accepted me on.
Tried out and got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I already had the tryout because they already had had me on as a guest twice that I had picked a topic and talked about the topic and that kind of thing. But yeah. Mm.
And one thing, you guys do, we don't because Taylor doesn't like his face, but you do two mediums. Like, you know, you put the videos up on YouTube where, you know, mm-hmm. Where people can see your faces, see what's going on, which it's something we've kind of discussed, but you know, maybe we'll get there. But again, back to context, it really kind of you get more of a context of how the conversation's going, the chemistry between everyone when you do video podcasting, as well as having, like, as you guys have it up on your traditional audio streaming websites, you know, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. But you also put the videos of the podcast up on YouTube too. I know this is the question Taylor would probably ask. Do you find it helps with with fans, or with listener?
Not really. Attention? Most people listen to the podcast. It's a long podcast, right? Hour, 2 hours. That's a long time to sit down and watch a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. But yeah. If you're driving in your car, yeah, why not just like listen in on the conversation and listen to people talking about stuff. So on not many people watch it on YouTube. When we stream live, that's an interesting thing that happens, because then we get that two-way feedback. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting thing that we get out of streaming on Facebook, streaming on YouTube. When we stream on YouTube, you can't handle guns, so that's a pain in the butt. Facebook allows it. Twitch allows it for now. Mm-hmm. We haven't been kicked off there. We stream to Player, Utreon. But get very little engagement over there because there's no one over there. Mm-hmm. Most people, the way that most people consume our show is podcast still, like by a factor of 10 times.
Mm. Yeah. That's kind of been my reasoning, you know, because Taylor's talked about, you know, maybe doing YouTube and stuff like that, or just maybe us putting the audio. But just, I know personally for me, when I listen to a podcast, it's usually because I'm doing something else, driving mm-hmm. somewhere, chores at home. At the gym, for me, the imagination wanders, like, oh, what's going on? And just, I don't know, I build a happier picture in my head sometimes. Like, I don't know.
Some people have said, I was listening to the podcast, you were talking about this and showing it, but I couldn't see it, so I went and watched it on YouTube to see, like, oh, that's what they're talking about. So it's hard to show, like, oh, you know, I got this new scope and I really like how many turns it's got on the turret, and you can't, it's hard to imagine some stuff just by talking about it. So I guess I like the backup of putting it out. And for us, it's not really a lot more work. We use StreamYard to just like push it out to everything at once.
Yeah.
I edit the audio version. So if we did the main topic first or last or something like that, I edit it to put the main topic in the correct spot. For the audio version. For video, if we streamed it that way, I don't edit shit because it's too much work.
get your kid to edit it, dude. One of my favorite videos that you ever put out, where you're just like, all right, and this is the first time I'm letting my son edit this video. It's that right there. I'm just like, all right, your kid's rad as hell. And like, just the edits and everything. Like, you could tell they recently learned how to, you know, use some chroma key and green screen and mm-hmm. I'm watching a lot of TikTok and Instagram reels. I'm just like, this is viewer retention for me. Just you got me hooked. You got me locked.
Yeah, he's still editing my videos. He edited the last couple for Hunting Gear Guy, but I haven't got him doing the Slam. It's the Slam Fire one is too easy for me to edit, so I just do those. And then we clip out. I'm supposed to be doing this more often, but like clipping out little first looks. Oh, first look at the 334. First look at the High Point or the Mossberg 464 or whatever the case is, right? So clipping those, because those individual videos perform better long term than our episodes, though, because those someone will be looking up the Gersan MC312 and you'll find Kyle's video on it about him talking through it and that kind of thing. So That's the other piece I've been trying to do to get some more evergreen content out of the same shooting. Cause you could, of course, just do more videos, just do more production, but it adds to the workload, adds to the amount of stuff that you're doing that's not involving the family.
Yeah. One thing, like with going on Twitch, I used to know Twitch's TOS, especially with firearms, like the back of my hand. I think with Twitch, you're allowed to handle firearms in hand, but it can't be in like a threatening way. Because if I remember correctly, like perfect example, T-Rex Arms, you know, they'll be doing a video and they'll be doing like a live review of a gun. There is rules. It can't be loaded. That's one thing. If I remember correctly, it cannot be a loaded gun. Mm-hmm. So like if you show like, yeah, and like, here's a mag, and like, unless it's like snap caps, which even then I bet you somebody at the TOS department of Twitch who doesn't know what a snap cap is might.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, you're allowed to have firearms. It can't be loaded. Can't be in a threatening manner. Can't be showing illegal modifications for like whatever country or whatever you're in. So, you know, if you're showing like, yeah, here's how you drill a third hole in your AR receiver, or like, hey guys, this is how easy a screwdriver, a drill and certain delicate pieces of metal react with each other if they're in polymer. You obviously can't do that. That would also, unless you're a French journalist for La Presse and trying to get the public safety minister to implement tougher magazine laws. I love that. How a French Canadian journalist is like, hey, Minister LeBlanc, here's how easy it is to turn a 530 mag into a 30. You just take this drill, and he recorded himself doing it, committing a crime, making a prohibited device, and nothing.
Maybe if you streamed on Twitch in French, then it would be okay. You'd be what are we doing? We're doing some modern art. We're doing some clothes hanger art, some sculptures out of clothes hangers. We're going to bend them in just this little way, make a happy little tree over here. But do it in French. They won't know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah. I know a homie out in Quebec. He's like, I'm calling the CFO about this. Like, the guy's got his name up and everything and talked about how he did it. I'm calling the CFO and reporting him. I'm like, fucking based, because fuck this guy. Like, I'm not one for snitching, but fuck this guy. Screw him. Yeah. Twitch is, I don't know. Twitch kind of does weird shit sometimes with the TOSs and stuff like that. I can tell you this. If you guys did it in a hot tub streams with guns, Slam Fire Radio is just going to be right up there. It's going to overtake everything.
Yeah. Just gotta show some skin, hey?
I think now, if I remember correctly, because I haven't streamed on Twitch in a bit, women are now allowed to show bare front nudity from the belly button up, if I remember correctly, as long as it's quote unquote art. I don't know. It's there's always stipulate. Yeah, it's weird. I don't get it. Not for me to dissect. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just screech at a computer screen while playing first person shooters. That's all I do. So
that's what Twitch is supposed to be.
That's what Twitch is supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And anyways, so being on the show since 2015, 9 years, that's a long time. And I didn't realize it, that until doing some research recently. I didn't realize the Slam Fire Radio podcast had been going on that long. Like, it is a long running show, very successful, 530 some odd episodes now.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
One a week. Yeah.
That's very impressive. Like, congrats to you guys for keeping it going that long. That is because I think the average podcast lifespan, if I remember looking when we started this podcast, like the average podcast lifespan is between a year and a half to 2 years before it starts to fizzle out, passion goes away, listener retention ship. So well done. But think back on that 9 years you've been there. I mean, like you talked about, you've had huge guests, Hickok 45, Ian Forgotten Weapons, like Ian from Forgotten Weapons. Wow. Damn. What has been a high point in the show's career that you've been with it that just absolutely sticks out, that you just look back and go, yeah.
We had Runkel on quite a bit before he was big. I think that was something I was pretty happy with, because we got to help him get to where he is. That was something I was pretty happy with. He had good content. He was going to get there anyways.
Yeah.
But, we got to be a part of that and help him on his rise. So that's something I'm really happy about. And then, yeah, just a lot of the learnings, a lot of people email into the show and they'll tell us about, how we help them make a purchase or how we help them, get into competition shooting or kind of take their next step. I talk about competition shooting a lot because it's a community on its own. A lot of adults just don't have that other community. Like they have their friends and family, they have their work, and maybe that's it. Maybe they don't do sports or anything like that. Maybe they don't have any other community of friends. And I think that the shooting community is a pretty dope community. A lot of cool people in it. And, guns in general, gun owners, like there's some wackos. I would say in the competitive shooting in, area, there's much fewer wackos than the general gun owner population. Like if you were to go to a gun show or something like that, the rate is pretty high. If you sit at a booth, you're going to talk to some nut jobs, guaranteed. And it won't even take that long. But in the competitive shooting community, not guaranteed. And there's a lot fewer of them.
To back up your point there, going on to the CCFR open Facebook page sometimes. Yeah. Some of the stuff that gets posted, one of my favorite, it got deleted after a day. But so someone just posts like, "Hey guys, thanks for welcoming me into the group. Good to be here." People are like, "Oh, hey, welcome, fellow CCFR member." And then the guy who, you know, the OP posted, "By the way, I've seen them. They're real. They exist. They're out there right now." And people are like, what are you talking about, dude? And then he's just like, they exist. They're out there right now. I think one is outside my door." And it's just like, and people are like, "OP, do you require assistance? Like, what are you talking about? Please tell us." And then like this, like, they're out with the caribou and the moose right now, something like that. Like some and I'm just watching this again, just like Michael Jackson popcorn meme, just like, just every 10 seconds, hit and refresh. And then, just weird cryptic stuff like that. And then, yeah, a couple hours later it was taken off the page, but it's just like, yeah. It's just like, that was interesting. That was a fun afternoon. Versus like, yeah, like in the competition scene. For me, the competition scene that I'm in mainly involved with is like the Brutality series and stuff like that. And I have yet to find someone in that group where it's just like, all right. The good talk. I'm going to go this way now for my own safety kind of deal. Yeah.
It will happen at some point. Yeah. But it's pretty good.
About a year that I've been doing it, still hasn't happened, but it's when
yeah, it's when. I imagine the same thing like playing adult soccer. Eventually you're gonna get someone who's, you know, a flat earther who thinks that the UN is trying to control their brain and all that kind of stuff. But competition's good. Anyways, so I talk about it a lot because I think that Canada has 2.something million shooters, people who have PALs and can own or do own guns. And I think a lot of them just use it once a year. They go deer hunting, or maybe they don't. Maybe it's just like their dad's gun that they just hang on to because it was dad's and that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get more of those people to do more with the hobby and doing more by, like, you know, going competitive shooting.
The only unfortunate thing about competitive shooting in Canada is, and this is not the competition scene's fault at all, but it's just how our nation is when it comes to the sparseness of population density. Because I think about, perfect example, one of our previous guests, Brock Lindell, where for him to go to a competition, he's in Drayton Valley, and he's just like, yeah, you know, we have the occasional IPSC shoot here. But it's very rare. Like for me to go to a competition, it's traditionally, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours I have to drive to go do that. And then, you know, you think about places like Saskatchewan, Manitoba, where you are in Ontario, where you are, you know, British Columbia. That's one of the unfortunate things that it's no one's fault besides the people who created this country over 150 years ago, those scallywags. The population, the sparseness of population density, and it can be difficult. And it's one of the unfortunate things that works against us, because there's there's probably a lot of shooters out there in small little towns who want to go to competitions, but for them to drive 3, 4, 5 hours, get accommodations on top of ammo, all that stuff, fuel costs, getting the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can tell who is serious about it, because I mean, there's dudes, you know, with the Brutality series, you've probably seen it in competitions too. The dudes who do want to do it will do it. They will go that extra mile. They'll drive out there. They'll fly out there. They'll do whatever they can. And they go,
travel.
Yeah. I mean, shit, there's dudes who came all the way from Saskatchewan to winter Brutality in March last year. There's dudes all the way from Saskatchewan, Manitoba, that have driven, flown. Yeah. It's one of the unfortunate things about our country is just how big we are limits sometimes.
I think, for some of those people, like, you might just have to be flexible on what competitive shooting sport you take up, because maybe there's an ORPS league in your area. I can shoot that. Oh, maybe it's, instead of IPSC, it's IDPA. Okay, well, close enough. Figure it out. Shoot IDPA instead, right? And I think you just have to be flexible on that to maybe be able to pick up something that you can actually do.
The one thing, though, and I pointed this out to Thomas Simpson, who runs the Brutality series here in Canada, but how cheap it is actually sometimes to fly to an event.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that too. So like for Night Brutality, my camera guy, Lloyd, he flew up from Vancouver to Prince George, and it was cheaper for him to fly round trip from Vancouver to Prince George than it was for me to drive from Kamloops to Prince George. His round trip was $297.
Yep.
And I pointed that out to Thomas, and he pointed that out to a lot of the people too. Like, to fly from Manitoba, from Winnipeg to Prince George, is round trip about $520. From Regina, it was about $480. From Edmonton, it was about, I think it was about $380 and stuff like that. And it's weird, like, because a lot of the time people go like, I want to go do an event like this. I want to go to X competition, but travel time, travel expense, too expensive. And because we're a majority of the time flying in Canada is, you don't want to do, because it's fucking ridiculously expensive compared to the States. You know, if you have a competition, if you're in like Charlotte, North Carolina, and there's a competition in Wyoming, well, your airfare is probably going to be $150 round trip if you fly JetBlue kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But in Canada, surprisingly, you just have to look far enough advance, you know, look far enough ahead in advance to see it. And yeah, you can actually fly for cheaper than it would be for gas, and obviously significantly faster. It's a weird little thing. People,
I tried to carpool. I went, did the team match in Peace River, and I had a full van with a trailer behind it, and that made it really cheap, because we're like getting half decent gas mileage, and for like split four ways, it was fine. It was fine.
I know a few dudes for Winter Brutality and Summer Brutality, they did that as well. Like out of Vancouver, they're like, all right, I got the truck, toss your shit in, everyone, we split gas bill four ways.
Yep.
And it does help. Yeah. So carpooling. So to the listener, if you got a community that around you that all want to go, I mean, it goes without saying, carpooling, you know, getting that HOV lane when going through the lower main line just gets you out of town that much quicker. So back on to, you know, content creation here. Cause you know, it's arguably one of the biggest names in Canada when it comes to, you know, YouTube content, gun content, in general. When creating a new video, is the inspiration from an idea that you might have in your head that you kind of go through and make that dream come to life? Or is it just you see a product and you want to learn about it and you want to put your information out there?
Yeah, it's a second one. I see a product. Maybe the information doesn't exist online. If the information doesn't exist, I'll for sure try, like, think about whether I'm going to do it. If the information exists and someone else did it really well, I won't bother. I won't do it.
Fair.
Even if it's something that I could do really well, it's a rifle that I could do. If someone else has done it well, I don't bother. It's about like adding to the collective knowledge of everyone on YouTube and on the internet, so that we can all figure out like what's good and what's crap, or what's good in some different areas and that kind of thing.
That's one thing I've definitely noticed, the differences between the Canadian and American GunTube culture is, for the most part, the Canadian content is mainly towards building that collective knowledge about a product so that Canadian gun owners or future Canadian customers have that knowledge base to go to before they make a purchase with a couple zeros behind it. Mm-hmm. Where in the U.S., and this is not me shooting on the U.S. at all. If anything, I'm kind of jealous. And it's because they're kind of spoiled for options, too. There's definitely a lot more entertainment value when it comes to gun content creation. Also, there's just a plethora of information down there. You know, you have AR15.com. There's a bajillion different forums down there. And then, to the point where they're using it more for entertainment. But it's all like, not to say that the entertainment isn't educational, because, you know, traditionally in a lot of the videos, there is some sort of educational factor to it. But there's definitely a lot more glitz, glam.
Yeah.
How can we make these millennials / zoomers / alpha gens
more blown up pumpkins and tannerite and that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nah, I decided a long time ago I wouldn't do it. The only stuff I'll do that's kind of along that vein is I'll let my teenage editor go buck wild with like weird stuff. And he's got just a green light to do that kind of stuff.
Right. Again, great. Yeah. It's watching your content every now and then you see when he gets that creative spark.
He gets motivated. Isn't just doing it for a paycheck.
It's enjoyable. Getting entertainment as well as information, getting a very healthy balance of both. It's retention. Yeah. Retention, man. It's all about retention. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of brought it up there a little bit earlier. But, you know, we're definitely severely limited here in Canada on what can be reviewed now because of legislative changes in Canada. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's unfortunate, but it's the reality we live in. Do you think with the way things are going in Canada that at some point the well for content creators might dry up, or do you think, you know, there'll always be a way?
No, there'll always be stuff to work on. It's just, you might not be working on ARs and pistols. You might be working on straight pull bolt action rifles and other god awful stuff that we need to be compliant. Right. It'll just be different stuff.
Yeah.
Now if enough of these laws discourage new owners to the point where ownership starts dropping rapidly, that's a different case. Then that would definitely start to curtail the amount of content creators that Canada could support. But I don't even know if they care. Like there's probably like 30 or 50 Canadian gun YouTube creators and some of them are very small, and they just keep plugging along doing what they want to do with talking about what they want to talk about. So, I think there will always be people creating this kind of stuff. It's just a question about what we'll be creating. Mm-hmm. I would like to have done more pistol reviews, for example, but it's too much of a pain in the ass. I'd have to like go meet someone at their house or go to the range with them and then review it. Like bring all my equipment to their house or get a loaner ATT or some other bullshit. I just can't be bothered to do it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the handguns get reviewed out of the US too. And they'll do a very comprehensive job. Yes. So the only ones that make sense for us to review are guns that are unique to our market or guns that have been modified to be unique to our market.
Norinco P226.
Yeah, the Norinco PT26 or the Olympia or that kind of thing. Or how they apply to our sports. So which pistol should you get in Canada for 3-gun? That answer changes in Canada versus the U.S., right?
Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Who was I talking to about that recently? Because we were talking about content creation and you were, you know, talking about the handgun freeze / ban. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're talking just anything when it comes to handguns now, like putting information out there until things change. You know, when things change, it's kind of a moot point in a way, because anyone who already owns that handgun owns it. And for the most part, they're going to learn about it themselves by going to the range, going shooting, or they already know it. And it's just when he brought that, I'm just like, yeah, that's kind of a interesting take, interesting point, because he's not completely incorrect. The one thing I've thought about just for me, for content creation, for me, is just, Yeah, because I wanted to do some handgun stuff because I love shooting handguns. Handguns are rad. The one thing I fucking wish I would have done before the freeze is just bought a P320 trigger pack and then just built a gun from there. That's one of my big regretties. I personally have found that it is, it has limited just me personally in some respects. But the other thing I like about that too is that it gives you more of a challenge for what, you know, like, all right, well, I'm still going to keep, like you said, you know, keep chugging along, still going to do this. Mm-hmm. What can I do? And I found that, you know, with everything in life, there's always going to be a silver lining. It's what you make of it. It's like, all right, it's going to force people to, and content creators to be more creative with what they put out. And I'm kind of interested to see what happens. Like one of the things I've said a few times on the show, like the government has not, our current government in power has not been shy. They do want to ban all semi-autos, basically. It's no secret. And to which I've said, okay, cool. It's going to push everyone into becoming good with bolt actions. And the coolest thing right now with bolt actions is precision rifle, pushing that bullet out farther than you can see with your naked eye, you know, getting 800 meter, 1 kilometer, over 1 kilometer shots. Cool. You're now it sucks because, you know, your semi-auto has to sit in a safe, but now you get to do, it's going to force you to do something different. You know, it's always easy to say the sky is falling, but finding that silver lining.
I hate PRS and like long range precision. I would do short range mil-serp, like action shooting. I would want to do that.
Yeah.
Loading on the move, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And talking to some dudes down in Vancouver, that actually is kind of picked up recently. Yeah. Like the battle rifle competitions where it's, you know, with Mosins or 303s, or, you know, British 303s or your Mausers or whatever SKS or whatever. Dudes like that's kind of gotten a little bit bigger since that's happened, which is kind of cool to see. And it's actually another good example, the brutality series at Winter Brutality and Summer Brutality last year. World War II man, as he's been coined, showed up in Canadian World War II khaki repros with a British SMLE in 303. Actually, no, Winter Brutality, you ran a Garand, ran an M1 Garand for that. And then for Summer Brutality, he ran a kilt, the full World War II garb, and a 303. And he fucking killed it. Bayonet charged things with the bayonet. And I wish I could have been there for it. But I saw some videos and yeah. And here's the funny thing too. World War II man absolutely creamed dudes with his bolt action 303 than some of the dudes running modern shooty scooty boy CZ brands and stuff like that, which was fucking, it's like, yeah, it's what you make of the gun. It's how you train. It's what you know. It's actually getting out and training.
How to get steady. How to get steady is a big part of that on different stuff. But yeah, they had a match. They had a mil-cert match at the range while I was there. I forgot about it. They announced it earlier, and it's been so freaking cold out here. And I'm like, I'm not going to that. It's going to be too cold. And then today it was warm, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to the range. I forgot that they had the mil-cert. Otherwise, like, yeah, I got a couple of mil-certs here. I could have brought out like my Enfield or my SVT-40 or my Mosin or Carcano or M1 Garand or some SKS, something like that. The M1 Garand's the best,
dude. So yeah, onto your tier video that you dropped out recently, I'm watching it. I'm like, all right, let's see what he says. And then every time you like, yeah, no, this belongs in this tier. I'm like, holy fuck! Like I'm watching the video. I'm like, everything. Like yeah, he completely right. Like there's nothing like this. I completely agree with this. I love it. Like
oh, that's not how most commenters.
I posted a comment on Reddit. Like yeah, no. I'm like yeah, no. I completely agree with this, and it got downvoted. It's like. Yeah. But then one person commented and I loved it. It's just like classic Canada where the M1 Garand is still an S tier rifle. I'm just like, yeah, the M1 Garand is beautiful. One of my best shooting memories ever was shooting homies. It was an Italian M1 Garand. Fuck, what was it?
Mine's Italian. Yeah, it's 308.
Theirs was a 30-06. Mm-hmm. And it had been bubbed at one point. Like someone JB welded a rail, a weave or a Picatinny rail to it. They fucked.
Perfect. Yeah.
Oh, actually, it was the Dustpan Dynamic dudes. I don't know if they still have the video up, but so they ground the fucking rail off, and then finished it beautifully. Added some bluing to it, and you like I handled the gun after they did it all, and you couldn't even tell it was magnifique. And like after shooting an M1 Garand, after growing up playing that, using that gun in video games, Band of Brothers, The Pacific, all that shit, and finally shooting it, it was just the culmination of childhood dreams. Just and what surprised.
It's such a good rifle. It's so good. Ian from Forgotten Weapons just did a video yesterday, the day before. Him and his buddy did two gun. One of them ran an M1 Garand and a 1911, and he Ian ran an SVT-40 and a Tokarev. And the Garand is so much better than the SVT. On one of the stages, he's like, he got pantsed by his buddy, and he's like, "Let me shoot the Garand and do the same stage." And he did it, and he was faster than his buddy. And it was like a minute of difference. Holy the sights shit. Are better. That like everything on that gun is so good for the time. You compare it to an SVT-40 wasn't even that common. You compare it to what other people really would have been running: Mosins, Enfields, Mausers, Carcanos. Like it's all garbage compared to the M1 Garand.
And my favorite thing about the Garand, so like 30-06, you know, ass whooper of a round, just a terrific, incredible round. And it kicked as hard as, actually my SKS, because I shot my SKS after the Garand, my SKS kicked harder than a Garand. Like it's, oh, so beautiful. Like John, what's his name? Garand. Oh, why am I blanking right now? Why is this the moment that my gun autism blanks out on names?
Trying to think of the designer, Garand.
Garand, what's his name? Oh, come on. Who designed Garand? John C. Garand. Yeah, I was thinking, I thought I was getting confused with John Moses Browning. Yeah, I was right. I'm like, you're confusing it with John Moses Browning, Pat. No, but I wasn't. but yeah, what a beautiful, like, it's just such an incredible fucking rifle. There's just no notes.
Perfect
no
for notes the time. Yeah.
And yeah, you look at it, like you said, you compare it to what was around at the time, and nothing could touch it. Like, oh.
So much better.
It truly is.
Yeah, fun gun. I think I'm going to do a PCC tier list next, but I'm going to get like way spicier with it. I'm going to intentionally put some stuff in some bad tiers, and just out of spitefulness, and it's going to be way less unbiased.
Haters gonna hate, but at the end it's of the day, like, like they say, one of my, you know, Nathan on Siebernart, like he says to people, like when people have a very biased opinion, show your brass deflector. Yeah, like basically, like show us how often you use your gun. Like people who tend to have deep set opinions about a platform they own traditionally don't have a lot of time behind the trigger on that gun.
Yeah,
it's gonna be.
I look for anyways, yeah, I'll do that with PCCs next, because that's people are always asking, what about the sub 2000s? Not a semi-automatic center fire, like full or intermediate cartridge. Like I was just doing 223 and 62x39. And for the Garand, I just added it because it's good for the price. And that's strange to say when they're like $2,000, but they're good for the price.
It's cheaper than a CZ Bren.
Cheaper
than a Sterling Arms R18. Than a BNT APC.
And more reliable than anything that's cheaper than it.
The only poopy thing right now is that if you have a 30-06 one, getting ammo for it, because
you got to reload or something. Yeah,
you have to,
or get it rebarreled in 308 so you can run that cheap Nork stuff.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah, if you have a 308 one, because that's like, now that I have a 308 rifle, you know, looking at ammo for it, like, fuck. I mean, a box of Hornady Black 157 or 158 grain Supermax is like $60 a box after tax. And that's terrific match ammo. And yeah, you could probably get some cheaper stuff, some shittier stuff. If you can find some Barnall on the shelf or surplus shit somewhere, or reload. Yeah, you can have an absolute, pun intended, blast with that gun. But PCCs, that's gonna ruffle some feathers. It's gonna shiver some timbers for sure.
Yeah, rustle some jimmies.
I look forward to that one. Well, Adriel, it's been an absolute blast having you on. You know, the past 2 hours have been absolutely terrific. Before we go, two more questions or two more things. One, if people already don't know who you are, plug yourself. Where can they find you? Where can they find your content?
HuntingGearGuy.com, Hunting Gear Guy on YouTube. Slamfire Radio is on every podcasting thing out there. And we're also on Facebook and whatnot.
And then the one question we ask all of our guests at the end is, and this can pertain to anything in life, is what is a skill or some knowledge that you think people should learn or expand their mind on?
Probably not first aid, but stop the bleed if you can. It's a 3-hour course. So have you done your first aid?
I have my stop the bleed and everything.
So first aid is bullshit.
It 100% is.
You do like little, make little donuts with your triangle bandage and put it around like a stick, or you put someone's arm up. You'll never save a life with it.
No.
Stop the bleed's better. It's got more gore, I guess, in the course,
yes,
which is a good thing because that's going to like desensitize you to a little bit. And the other thing it'll do is encourage you to carry a first aid kit in your vehicle that, that may save a life.
Or a tourniquet on you.
Or a tourniquet on you. Yeah. I hate carrying stuff in my pockets. So I just, all my vehicles have first aid kits in it. Mm-hmm. Just before Christmas, I ended up having to use it. There was a freak accident in front of me. And this old lady fell out of a bus and got critically injured. And I got to use all my stuff. It didn't make a difference. She took like some bad head injuries. But because I was there with that stuff, I got to put all that stuff in play. And like, it's important. It's important for people to have that kind of first aid for stop the bleed, as well as the kit, so that mm-hmm. they can react and potentially save someone's life.
I want to thank
Ranger
you.
Off.
Yeah, no, exactly. And yeah. I want to thank you for that perfect segue into one of our sponsors, Off-Spec War, who teaches Stop the Bleed. He's certified by whatever agency and sells first aid kits. I mean, you would have heard his ad roll about an hour or so ago if you're listening to the show. But yeah, if you're looking for training resources, Off-Spec War, C-Toms out of Edmonton as well. Like, they're the pioneers, essentially, when it comes to a lot of modern first aid stuff, a lot of kits. But I 100% agree, because a lot of people, like, yeah, your St. John's Ambulance, Red Cross first aid that you get through your employer, horseshit. It won't teach you anything. Actually, a fun story. So with our job, every 3 years we have to go through requalifications with what we do, mm-hmm. and then part of that is first aid. And so the first aid lady's teaching us all this, you know, the usual stuff, like, here's your ABCs, 30 and 2. And I'm like, yeah, can we learn stuff about, like, amputations, like how to stop the bleed with amputations? She's like, well, why do you need to know that? Like, because when people get hurt in our job, they're not going home. They're going to a hospital or they're going into a pine box. And then she's like, no. And then we had a dude there at our job who has had 2 fatalities at work. Another dude who had to deal with a triple amputation in the classroom, and they are telling their stories, and the lady went white. And then it was time for lunch, and then we came back from lunch, we had a different instructor. It's just like, I have some real world context behind this. Even though this is not part of the curriculum, this is clearly more important for you guys. And let me show you. But yeah, stop the bleed courses too, they're not crazy expensive either. Like, they're usually in and around $100. And to, you know, most people, when there's a bad incident, it's going to be hemorrhaging of blood. That's going to be the death of them. So learning how to use a tourniquet, learning how to use a chest seal, learning how to do all this stuff, it's super fucking important. I will 100% echo that.
Yeah. And then having the confidence to take action and do something. Because yes. I think a lot of people, when they're faced with something that's traumatic or something that's like an incident like that, they freeze up, or they're just not... They rely on, like, the bus driver was yakking in my ear, like, make sure she doesn't fall asleep. It's like, motherfucker, that's not a real thing. Like, stop bothering me. that kind of thing, right?
Put a pen in her mouth so she doesn't swallow her tongue. Like,
yeah. It's important that if you're on the scene and you're helping, you're doing something positive. You're doing something that may help, and at least at the very least won't harm the person that you're trying to help.
Yeah, being an asset. It's super important.
Yeah.
Well, dude, thank you so much again for coming on. Really appreciate it. And to you, the listener, go drink some water and go do some dry firing.